When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend, Robbie Earle. And today, we have a very special co-host. Everyone, please welcome Matt from the Direct to Friends from Work. Let's go, Matt. Welcome.
Yes.
How is everybody doing? I am so happy to be here.
The studio audience is just losing it.
Yeah, see, that's I had to take a little pause, wait for the audience.
Yep.
I've been watching a lot of that 70s show, so I'm very familiar with the studio audience pause as of late. Guys, thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to chat about what we're going to chat about today, but more excited to see these two beautiful faces. I mean, come on. This is the Friends from Work podcast. This is the show.
Let's go.
This is the show. The Apple Podcast certified Friends from Work podcast. Come on now.
We do have to share that. I'm not going to lie.
What
we do
a
have
fun
to say
week.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, by the way, our podcast, Friends from Work, featured on the front page of Apple Podcasts.
Wow.
The very front page. Pretty wild.
Awesome.
So thank you to everyone at Apple and all you out there listening. Appreciate all you guys.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's just a very fun couple weeks because we were just talking about this before we started. Black Panther Wakanda Forever is just such a good movie. And it's been a really fun one to sit in. Like, as heavy of a movie as it is, and that's a lot of what I love about it. It's also like the more I think on a lot of the other stuff it was doing, the way that it introduces Namor and the whole Riri. It's like there's so much fun stuff. I'm just like glowing.
Rob, we're not talking Wakanda Forever today because not everyone has seen it, so we got to be careful of avoiding any Black Panther talk.
Okay, listen, I think if at this point you are listening to this podcast and are not yet aware that Namor and Riri are characters in Wakanda Forever, you have larger problems that we can't solve for you here today.
You're not listening to this podcast if you don't know that they're on that movie.
That's true. So, Matt, before we dive in, how are things in your world? Tell our listeners what's going on with Matt.
Things are going well. We are working over at thedirect.com. For those who don't know, thedirect.com is a website I write for. And it covers all different kinds of movie universes, mainly Marvel, Star Wars, and DC. We recently started stretching out into more general movie news, such as Harry Potter, Margot Robbie's Pirates of the Caribbean film getting scrapped, which makes me very angry, and also Game of Thrones.
I heard about that.
Yeah, it's upsetting. But
okay, yes. I was going to ask, did y'all do any like Lord of the Rings, House of the Dragon coverage?
So along with writing for The Direct, we also have a podcast, The Direct Podcast, where traditionally for almost 2 years, it has been Marvel, Star Wars, and DC, the red brand yellow brand and blue brand, but this year we added the iron brand as we recapped every episode of House of the Dragon, and we are now covering Game of Thrones news. We wanted to do Lord of the Rings, but I'm not a Lord of the Rings guy. As much as I love fandom and movies like that, I've never dove in, but things are going well, man.
Yeah, who would be, honestly?
Yeah, right.
Who would?
we're about to hit a big gap of content coming up once Andor wraps.
Sure.
And the holiday special is over, but we're gearing up. We're doing a lot of fun things. And yeah, it's a good time covering the universes you love in my radio voice.
Hey, Matt, side note here. My fandom with Star Wars is complicated. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
And Andor's legit, dude.
Dude.
Andor is actually really good. It's really good.
That is a show and a half, and I tweeted this out the other day. I'm comparing it to House of the Dragon. Maybe not in quality.
Oh,
maybe
wow.
Not in impact.
Oh,
it's
wow.
Still got two episodes to go. But my comparison is when House of the Dragon started, there were so many people who were like, oh, I didn't like the way Game of Thrones ended, so I'm not going to watch it. And it took people saying for weeks and weeks, it's good, it's good, it's good. Andor's the same way. I didn't like Obi-Wan. I didn't like Book of Boba Fett. I'm not going to watch it. Week after week, it's good, it's good. This show slaps, and everyone needs to be watching it.
It actually is good. It's very good.
I still haven't seen it. I know. I'm behind the times.
It's a show that Robbie will like Robbie likes things that are a little slower paced and a little more serious in tone.
Yeah.
And, that was a history major.
And you're going to like it.
Here's my stand for you, Robbie. With two episodes left, we still have two episodes to go. It's the best thing Star Wars has made since 1983. In my opinion.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, hold on. Rogue One's up there for me still. I got to see how this lands. Okay.
We got two episodes left to figure out the Rogue One debate. That's really where it is.
Sure. The second thing I wanted to say today is we mentioned this on social media, Rob, but congratulations to Bethany and Lorena. We never said it on the podcast. They were the winners of our Epic Hero Shop Halloween, Epic Heroween costume contest with just two incredible costumes. Lorena in a full-blown She-Hulk outfit.
Yeah.
And Bethany with like a fancy TikTok video. By the way, Bethany dressed up as a million things, but one of them being this TikTok video of her as the Mighty Thor. And it was pretty legit.
It was very legit. Yeah, I went back and saw that afterwards and I was like, yeah, I mean, we had so many good entries.
So many.
But also like excellent. Excellent work, Bethany.
So congratulations to them. We already reached out with them, figuring out some of the details. But for all the rest of our listeners, don't forget, check out epicheroshop.com and use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK to save some money on your first purchase. And then lastly, before we dive into our scheduled programming for today, Matt, this is going to be really fun because I have been going back through the MCU. Our listeners know this, slowly but surely. And I have been like totally restarting. I erased my rankings. I am turning off my phone. I'm turning off the lights. I'm making popcorn and I'm trying to treat every single film and project as if it's my first time ever seeing it. And then I am creating two new lists, a preference ranking, just strictly what do I like to watch, has nothing to do with critic. And then I'm creating a just straight critic ranking. Like, okay, if I had no other ties, and it's been a really fascinating exercise. Part of that exercise, and I'm going to reveal those rankings, by the way, probably next week, Rob, where I'm at, maybe an update, maybe 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
I think
rankings.
People will be a little shocked at some of the preference things.
I was actually thinking about this today. I really want to engage in that experiment as well. It's been a bit since I've seen a lot of the, like I was in the habit of doing rewatches way too frequently. Yes. Actually, that's not true. You can't do it too frequently.
True.
You can't do it too frequently.
Yeah.
But I was doing a lot of them.
But just trying to get your mind right beforehand.
Yeah. Yes, but it's been a bit now, and there's been so much. It's tricky because it used to be a thing. Like I remember before WandaVision came out, after I took the bar exam, I rewarded myself with an Infinity Saga rewatch.
Yeah.
And on the one hand,
that's like your treat.
it's my treat, and I watched a lot of movies in less hours than is healthy.
Sure.
But still, even if I hadn't done that, it's not a crazy thing to be able to have rewatched the Infinity Saga within a couple weeks or a month if you like have the time off and you're just going crazy with it. But since Phase 4, I'm like, holy cow, man. I don't know. I'm going to have to like legitimately take off from work. Like, this is going to have to be like a vacation time thing if I want to try to make it through all of everything in any kind of reasonable time frame.
Well, where our lives are different is usually I have my evenings free. So after I put my daughter to sleep, I have from 7 to 10 to do anything anyways. Yep. So my wife and I just, without rushing it, can watch two a week, not even really pushing
it.
And it's a great pace.
Robbie, if you want to hop in, I'm down to do it with you. I'm due as well.
Oh, wow. Well, now, I mean,
you might have
don't
to.
Tempt me.
I'm here. We can do it across two podcasts. Let's make it happen.
But part of the fun of the rewatch, Matt, is that I added a trivia component to this where I came up with one question from each movie and our listeners are racing to the answer to this. And so I'm excited for you to be here for that today. Yeah. I have to update the previous two questions, which I'm going to quiz you on. Because one of them, I think I finally stumped everybody, Robbie.
Okay.
Maybe even you.
Oh, wow.
But you're a big Guardians guy. And this is from Guardians 2. Okay. So here's my past two trivia questions. Then I'll give you two new ones from my most recent rewatch. Okay.
Gotcha.
First of all, from Doctor Strange. Both of you can answer this. What was the Wi-Fi password at Kamertage?
What was the Wi-Fi password at Kamertage?
Do either of you remember this?
And I want to say namaste. I want to say namaste, but I don't think that's right.
By the way, Matt, I've been making these very difficult because obviously we have a lot of mega fans. So I got to go real deep.
Yeah, yeah. I'm impressed.
What is
I'm
this still my impressed. Mantra?
It's Shambhala.
Shambhala, sure. Sure. That was my nickname in high school, actually. Shambhala.
Yeah. Okay, and here's what we really test you now. Nobody got this right. In Guardians 2, what did Yondu say he was doing before he became a Ravager? So there's this scene where he's in the prison on the Ravager ship and there's been a mutiny and he's talking and he says, man, and then this is what he says he was doing for X amount of time beforehand. Do either of you know that one? Because nobody knew it.
I don't. I really don't. I wish I did, but I don't.
I love it.
It's a great scene.
I mean, this is as deep as it gets. I thought the Ravagers like saved him from the slave trade or something.
Oh, really close. He says he was a Kree battle slave for 20 years before Sakaar picked him up.
Okay.
Isn't that awesome?
So you were like so
the
close.
Coolest thing? Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Okay. So
that is great.
That brings me to today. So let's get into two more trivia things, and then I got a rewatch update for everyone. Then we get into our Guardians discussion, okay? So
love it.
I watched Ant-Man and Civil War this past week. Actually, the last 2 weeks because we had recorded the Black Panther episode, yada, yada, yada. But anyways, here we go. Trivia. From Ant-Man.
Wow.
What song accidentally gets played in the briefcase fight?
Easy.
Don't answer this one because this is for our listeners.
I know this one.
You do?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, question number two then for our listeners. From Civil War. Towards the very end of the film, Steve and Bucky are taking the airplane to whatever it is, the winter, where are they going?
Russia.
Siberia. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Siberia. And as they're deplaning in the back, they have a quick little conversation. It's a two-parter. Steve says, oh, is that the girl that you blew X amount of dollars? How many dollars
did he
blow for the stuffed bear, the redhead? And what was her name? So what was the redhead's name?
I know her name.
What was the redhead's name and how many dollars did he spend trying to get her that stuffed bear?
I have a guess.
This is counting inflation, right?
It's definitely a guess. For sure. But I definitely know the name. It's a name I am very fond of.
Okay. I love it. It's just a fun thing for us, you know?
Yeah,
mixing a little trivia here or there.
The Who Wants to Be a Millionaire music is just that.
Oh, man.
And you even did a little bit of a Regis impersonation there with the pop.
Yeah, I know. I was about to say the same thing. It was like, wow.
Is that your
I didn't realize. Final answer?
I'm really getting my Regis dialed in. I should have gotten the accent, the final answer stuff. Oh, man.
Regis is an all-time accent to pull out at a party.
Yeah. I am not an accent guy. I'm terrible at it. Okay. So I got one last tangent, then I swear we're going to get into Guardians of the Galaxy. We have the holiday special coming up already next week. It's great. Next
Jeez.
Friday, I think. November 25th is my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. Which means, man, even though Black Panther just came out and we're not talking about that today, this is the last bit of content until, what, February we're talking now? Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
we want to get your minds right here for some Guardians of the Galaxy. But I just got to do one tangent. I was going through my rewatch. Robbie, this hit me. In the Friends from Work watch order, do you realize what a stretch of films we get once you get past a certain... So like once past a certain point, this is the run I'm on right now in our order. Civil War, Black Widow, Black Panther, Homecoming, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Ragnarok, Infinity War, and Endgame. Are you kidding me with that stretch? So like you have to get through a few bumps in the road early on. Mm-hmm. Once you get here, are you kidding?
Yeah.
It's wild. I always whenever... My favorite thing about the Friends from Work watch order is how often I've been able to see folks utilize it the way it was intended, which is not just as a rewatch, but as a potential first watch. Because the whole idea when we started the podcast, like we've said a lot lately, was to give people a way to kind of come in and understand something that felt overwhelming, which is funny to think that the MCU in 2019 was overwhelming. But I love whenever people get to that point when they specifically tell me that they've hit, what is it, I guess, Ant-Man.
And Guardians 2. For me, I know Matt likes it. I don't love that movie. But once you get past that, that's when it's like, holy cow.
I mean, the whole Civil War, it's one of the things, I think that's one of the slices of the watch order that I love the most, because it's just one of the portions of the Infinity Saga I love the most. Is the Civil War era and all the fallout. And I think, you know, I the Black Widow love that we have is one of the hotter takes, I guess, from Friends from Work. And I think so much of that is just like, yeah, I get it. I get that people thought it should have come out at a different time. I get a lot of the complaints, but I love that particular moment in time in the MCU so much.
Yeah.
And I think that there's just so much fertile ground there that, man, yeah, I'm jealous. You're in a good spot.
I think something that really makes Black Widow work really well in that watch order is that Civil War might be her best movie outside of like Endgame. You know what I mean? Like Civil War is an elite Natasha Romanoff movie. So like that thread leading right into Black Widow, where you get to meet 2021's direct.com co-rookie of the year, Yelena Belova. It just adds so much depth to Natasha there. And that's a great switch up you guys made in the watch order. Probably my second favorite on the Friends from Work watch order, besides, you know, of course, Captain Marvel making sense in the MCU timeline. I think that helps that movie out a lot.
I agree.
And so if that's our hottest take, I don't know if this is a hot take, but rewatching Civil War in the way I did, it's currently my number one preference. It is unbelievable. It's an unbelievable movie. I was just struck by it literally does everything well. I think it's maybe my favorite dialogue ever written, Marcus and McFeely. Like, when you have, we've said this so many times in this podcast, when you have the background of all those characters to balance them all, but still make it come to a head to where there's this shot at the very end where it's literally the peak of sadness, even though no one has died or anything like that. But you get this look on Tony's face after he's been beaten up by Cap. You get this look on Cap's face, the dialogue there, and then Zemo outside is depressed. And Black Panther's stopping him, and he's realizing this has all just been terrible. And the music's playing and it's like
haunting.
I dude, the movie's nearly perfect. That's my hottest take. It's so unbelievable. I just had to say that.
It's a perennial top five. I think that
yeah, it's
Civil War for us over at thedirect.com. Sorry, Robbie, but you know, we do rankings all the time. That's like my favorite thing to do with these is rankings, because I love seeing people's different preferences and how those balance out between, you know, different lists across different factors as well. You know, best sequels, best team up movies, etc. One of the biggest things that I've come across is how shocked I am how few people have Civil War over Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier's fantastic, don't get me wrong. That's probably one of the best, if you want to call it, solo comic book movies ever made.
It's but tight.
Every time I watch Civil War, I just can't get out of my head how much Civil War does the Winter Soldier stuff just as well as Winter Soldier. Plus, you get a little more comedy. Plus, you get the Queen's title card. Plus, you get T'Challa, and the first time you hear the drums in the MCU,
dude, that's what I was going to say. This movie already balancing Cap story, and then all of the other Avengers. It's basically an Avengers movie. It's not only doing that perfectly. This movie has no business treating Spider-Man and Black Panther as good as it does. Literally, T'Challa is like a star of that movie. It's not even like he's a side role. And then Spider-Man steals the show. This is my hottest take ever. It's maybe my favorite written Spider-Man and Black Panther. But like the banter from Spider-Man when he's like fighting Bucky and Falcon and stuff, that's like my Spider-Man. It's so elite, the writing and the introduction there. And yet it doesn't take away from the foundation of the film being Cap and Tony. It has no business doing those things that well. That's it.
I'll put another one out there. Sebastian Stan's best movie.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably true.
You know what I mean? Like Falcon Winter Soldier's fantastic for different reasons. But like, you know, just in that scene you were talking about, when Bucky goes to punch Spider-Man and he stops him, and then he talks and Bucky realizes that that's a kid underneath that mask, his face is just shocked and awe, and it adds so much to that. I think, it's a top-tier film, guys.
Marcus and McFeely are so tight with their dialogue, too. Yeah. Like, the jokes never feel out of place. It never feels too much.
Dude, I think that's the thing. I mean, I love the Russos, and I think that the difference the Russos make is clear in, you know, when you look at the Marcus McFeely movies they were on and the ones that they weren't on, and how much they shine. So the Russos get their due, clearly. But that's the thing. Like, that's what makes that movie and Infinity War what they are to me, is just like every line. It's an economy of writing too. You know, it's not just how good the writing is.
No line is wasted.
Yeah, it's how much each line has to do in conveying, like, especially in Infinity War, which we don't have to get into, but in Civil War as well, like, conveying so much of the personality of the person, the character delivering the line. But also, like, I remember leaving Infinity War and thinking what's wild is how shell-shocked I am, and also how funny so much of that movie was. Civil War's the same way. Yeah. Man.
So wild. That's my tangent for the day.
It's a good one.
Well, it is a good one. I'm so excited because we're talking about that stretch in the watch order and how that sort of starts with Guardians 2. Guardians 2 is one of those movies that Kyle and I have always seen differently. And it's one that I experience differently on almost every rewatch, weirdly. Like, I feel like it's very mood specific. There are times where, like, whenever I first saw it in the theater, I loved it. There are times where I watch it and I kind of see what Kyle's saying, where it's a little bit overly jokey. But one of my favorite things about Matt is that Matt loves Guardians. He loves Guardians Volume 2. Mm-hmm. And it makes me see the things that I love in Guardians Volume 2, and that makes me happy.
And well, to just jump in really quick, I'm really sorry, but in my recent findings, like I said, I'm always looking at people's rankings. Age of Ultron has adjusted appropriately, I think, as to where it should be ranked as opposed to where we used to rank it, you know, back in the day.
Thank you.
You know, just amongst Avengers movies. And I think Guardians Volume 2, for me, has taken over the throne as most underrated MCU movie, in my opinion. So that's the energy I'm bringing into this.
Wow, I love that. I love that. Well,
I'm bringing in a very combative energy, but I'm not going to combat you, okay? Just know that that's...
I don't know. I kind of want you to. I feel like Matt's got what it takes. He's Steve Rogers with a punching bag. He's been prepping for you. Okay. So today, if If you haven't caught on yet, we are getting to do one of my favorite kinds of episodes, which is a Saga So Far.
Yes.
Patented Saga So Far episode. Again, I have to say, this is I think how we first met Matt was talking about Civil War. He edited together this incredible video post compilation for our Saga So Far about Civil War.
Oh, I forgot about that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
great
that
stuff.
That was before, you know, a little backstory. If you guys want to get a little teary-eyed up in here,
come on.
This podcast, the Friends from Work podcast, is what inspired me to get into some sort of comic book journalism of any kind. And you know, you guys pushed me to sign up for the Direct and start writing and start designing and start doing a podcast. So yeah, that was my introduction into the world that I currently live in, was helping you guys out with the Saga So Far, one of my favorite titled segments of all time.
That's Robbie.
Wow.
It's a good one.
I do love alliteration. Thank you. If we accomplish nothing else with this podcast, the fact that we brought Matt into the world that we now occupy, I feel like it's worth it.
I appreciate that, guys.
Today's Saga So Far is specifically focused on, as you probably guessed, the Guardians of the Galaxy, because, like Kyle said, we are 1 week away from the Guardians holiday special. If you haven't seen the trailer for that yet, we will probably talk about it briefly here at the end. I would suggest that you pause and go watch that, because it's a really fun trailer. We also broke that down a few weeks ago, but that is coming soon. And so we thought it would be fun to take an episode and kind of walk back through each of the appearances that we have had of the Guardians of the Galaxy and talk about kind of the story that's being threaded throughout those. So we will get into that after a quick word from these sponsors.
Robbie knows that's one of my favorite themes ever. I had to do it. I love it so much. Oh my gosh.
You stole it from me in the theme draft we did on the Direct Podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Man, I've always been higher
on that one than you, Rob. Always have been.
True. Although I can't get into it now, but that's one of the things I'm most disappointed about as we look to Guardians Volume 3 is the lack of that composer.
Tyler Bates is not doing it. I didn't know that.
No Tyler Bates.
Oh, I didn't know that. You just ruined the whole podcast episode.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Don't get me on a tangent like this. Why not let him finish it out again? It drives me insane.
Guns bringing the composer from Suicide Squad.
John Murphy.
I
mean, I have no idea about John Murphy. I'm just saying it bums me out for that theme. Because, by the way, the one thing that I think Guardians 2 does better than Guardians 1 is I think the score even improves.
Oh, the score is so good. Yeah.
So anyways, wow.
Okay. Sorry, Kyle.
Crush
that dreams. Said, luckily everything we're going to cover today is, you know, firmly back in a Tyler Bates world.
Okay, so thank you.
Our Guardians Saga So Far journey begins in really great year for the MCU. 2014, we're all just reveling in the wonder that is Guardians of the Galaxy and Winter Soldier and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And
absolutely,
Guardians of the Galaxy, it comes out, no one knows who any of these characters are. Everyone's kind of revved up for Age of Ultron. I remember hearing, we've talked about this on the podcast all the time. Everyone's like, why is there a talking raccoon and also a talking tree? Marvel's lost its way. This is going to be awful. Obviously, that is not what happened. James Gunn makes his incredible entry into the superhero movie world with one of the still best MCU entries ever, undoubtedly. And that's where we meet our core crew here. Peter Quill, Rocket, Groot, Gamora, and Drax the Destroyer. So what we're going to do for each of these entries here is I'm going to be lazy and toss it to y'all since I'm kind of designating myself moderator here. I want to ask y'all how you think each of these appearances of our Guardians characters, what it gives us story-wise in terms of the group and kind of your thoughts on what it gives us in terms of the characters individually. And so I'll start with Matt. You know, we meet the Guardians here in this first entry, and they kind of come together and they start as just a bunch of rogues and end as something resembling a team. If you were to summarize where that movie leaves our characters, kind of what that does for their story, for their saga so far, if you will, how would you do that?
I think that Guardians 1 is just such an example of a baseball analogy I make with comic book movies all the time. And the analogy is that in baseball, the harder you swing, the better chance the ball is going to go out of the park. But it's also the best chance for you to completely miss and look like an idiot. And it's something that I think some studios that James Gunn has previously gotten involved with, I think something that they have failed to do in recent years is take some more big risk to make up for, some offbeat characters or offbeat storytelling. When James Gunn put out the teaser poster for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, it famously said on the bottom, "You're welcome." And people forget that because that's not the official poster, but it says "You're welcome" on the bottom of the Guardians teaser poster. And that shows confidence. That shows that James Gunn knew that he had characterized these characters, written them in a certain way, and had the actors involved to deliver what no one expected he could, and that is a fan favorite film from characters that comic book diehards don't even know exist. And I think that you see that throughout this movie in each character individually, but I think even more so in Guardians 1 specifically, you see it as a group. You see it with the dynamics. The first scene, you know, we meet a few of them in different spots. Obviously, Peter Quill's our guy, and, he gets on Morag, and it's "Come and get your love." I walk down the aisle at my wedding to "Come and get your love."
And oh, love that.
Didn't so, like this, blacked out. It was the moment of my life. But, and then I got married. And, but, you know, just like having that energy from the moment you meet your main character, it sets the tone, it sets expectations for the audience. This is going to be fun. This is going to be more upbeat than maybe you thought it would. And you see that as we get to the team together. And, you know, we can go on and on about all the different parts that make this cohesive unit such a fun, dynamic group. But think about the first time we see them on a bridge in Xandar. It's the power set display. You know, here's what each character can do from a power set standpoint. Rocket is smart with the gadgets. Groot can get a lot taller than you and pick you up in a bag. Gamora, obviously the assassin type with, you know, the quickness and the knives. And Quill, he's the more, savvy pirate-like fighter, you could say. Remember that old show, Ultimate Warrior or something, where they would put like a pirate?
Ninja Warrior?
Awesome. Yeah, no.
Well, both of those things are shows.
Those are shows. Ninja Warrior is But, I love how you see all the different fighting styles from all four of those characters right away, and then we meet Drax later. That is the kind of stuff James Gunn does in this movie to individualize them as a team, which just sounds, you know, redundant and weird. But, like, it's for some reason, the charisma oozes through this movie through the characters because they are so inherently who they are. And at the end of the day, they're likable characters. Sometimes people, when they make movies, forget to make people like the characters. And I think that being a priority of this one is huge. And as we leave off, you know, you want to do something good, something bad, a little bit of both. All right, a little bit of both. These are our guys. This is the first superhero parody thing ever, and it ends up being a top five MCU entry for a lot of people. So I think this movie specifically sets the team up so well that later we can start diving into little different pockets of it, and it feels like a natural progression.
I found something inside myself that was so brave. Yeah, when she rolls her eyes, that's like one of my favorite. And the joke so that great. Kyle Cousins originally pointed out in that first episode when he's like, "We had a deal, bro," and then he sees Gamora and he's like, "Hey, Peter Quill." Some people call him Star-Lord. It's like so smooth instantly.
You know, I just hate a guy who doesn't keep up with his word, you know?
Yeah.
Disgusting, really.
You are a man of honor.
So
I know Saga So Far is meant to be focusing on the characters and not talking about necessarily the critical view of any of the movies. Sure. Really, we want to like get people caught up to speed before they see a new entry. And that's what I love. But I just got to say here, and this is my second disclaimer. We have talked about this a lot in the podcast, but for new listeners out there, I just want to reiterate this. Guardians of the Galaxy, for me, in a lot of ways, is my MCU origin story too. Because as a lot of listeners know, I was
abducted by aliens.
I was abducted by aliens. Age. My mother died of some crazy disease.
Really cursed to be a Vikings fan.
Stop, everybody. No, but I have no background with this stuff, right? So like I saw Iron Man, thought it was amazing, but I didn't know anything. I didn't know Thor's hammer. I didn't know what any of the phase one things were, but I really enjoyed it. Then I loved Avengers and I was kind of getting in at that point. And I remember being at Trivia, Robbie, at Mellow Mushroom seeing an advertisement, this trailer. You love Mellow Mushroom.
I got one out here in Denver. It's great.
They have some great like beer cheese dip with Sure. Drunken Fun Guys, that's what it's called. Shout out to Mushroom. Yeah. But I saw the trailer and I was the person you're talking about. I was the person that said, this is where I draw the line. Like, I have no background with this stuff. I can get into Tony Stark, but I can't get into a talking raccoon in a tree and whatever. And then obviously, eventually, because again, I was not the first person in the theater because of that. Eventually, I saw it and it blew my mind. And now bringing it full circle, I just finished this movie in my rewatch and it still is my critic number one thus far. Like it is still flawless. It is still so funny. It still has all the emotion. And so I just had to add that really quick before we get started. Mm-hmm. This is still in some ways my origin story too.
I love that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And it speaks to another quality that these characters have that some films just miss. Relatability. You know, people can see themselves all different kinds of characters in this. It is a talking raccoon, it is a tree, but they do have like authentic emotions for people to latch onto, and for it to come out of nowhere, like Kyle just explained, you know, I think that leaves an impact.
I can't believe I'm just laughing the whole time and it's so fun. You don't even think you care about the characters. And then when Peter sees his mother and says, "Peter, take my hand," it's like, oh my gosh, I'm like crying. What the heck?
I don't know where
I think before we kind of leave the critical side of that behind, something that always sticks out to me about that first Guardians film is anytime I talk to someone, they're not a Marvel diehard, you know, and they've seen a lot of Marvel movies, maybe all the Marvel movies, but they're not, they've maybe seen all of them once or something. And maybe, you know, 90% of them. Almost every time I can predict that person's favorite Marvel movie is going to be Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, it's so accessible.
And it's so accessible. Like to Matt's point, it's relatable. And the funny thing is it's not, you know, this is just how it goes with really good things like that. It's people want to try to figure out how to replicate it. And it's not any one set of elements. It's just how well it's done. You know, it's like, because it's not like, like we say it's accessible, but we're dealing with, it's like a space opera movie, you know, with like a bunch of like, there's all like, there are multiple alien races involved. It's funny. It's a really, it's a really unique, yet again, somehow widely accessible brand of humor within the superhero context. It's like, I was saying this earlier. I think that each phase has kind of had a movie that was tasked with doing a lot of world building. and outside of just the kind of main tentpole Avengers movies. And I think the Phase 2 movie was Guardians because it's introducing the Infinity Stones. It's really leaning into who Thanos is. Like, there was a lot that that movie was having to do that doesn't necessarily comport with this reputation it has of being really breezy and easy to watch.
Sure.
But it is really breezy and easy to watch. It's crazy.
It is.
It's just a wild, wildly successful film.
To answer your original question going way back, I think Matt hit the nail on the head. I think the main takeaway is the characters are left in a really fun space. Like Matt said, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. That's the difference there. It's a team that is willing to admit, I mean, even the beginning of Guardians 2, that they're still doing it for money. They're doing it, you know, where it's two-time world savers, galaxy savers. It's still got
twice
this,
as much.
Exactly. It's got this rogue feeling to it. And that's how it's different from the Avengers. But it's also different from like a, you know, like a Thunderbolts or Suicide Squad thing. Cause it's not, they're not villains. They're just Ravagers. And that's a unique space to leave the characters, I think.
Yeah, it's something that it was new at the time, right? And you know, you look back at the early, you know, the first two phases of the MCU. I think there's a clear four most important projects. Iron Man introduced what the tone of the MCU was going to be. Avengers introduced the idea of bringing these movies together. Winter Soldier proved that we can be more than just a comic book movie, and Guardians of the Galaxy set the tone for the cosmic side of the MCU moving forward, and it all happens here in Volume 1, setting up a fun time, and out of nowhere you get the emotion. I think that's when it clicked for a lot of comic book filmmakers that forcing emotion can oftentimes come off really wrong and just not really hit. That's a lot of my problem with Eternals, is that like the emotion is being kind of like pushed in that movie.
But you said it too, from the story perspective, just the world building. Like seeing other planets, seeing other galaxies, seeing other races of people and cultures, and it's different, it's colorful, like just going elsewhere in the MCU, that was huge.
Right, and James Gunn's always so good at that, and he's always so good at blending the utilitarian parts of a movie in with the style and the tone and the fun that you're having. Think about it, guys. They go to nowhere to sell this Infinity Stone, the Power Stone, and do you guys remember what Nowhere is? It's the floating head of a Celestial.
Yeah, correct.
Imagine if you had seen Eternals before that. A floating head of a, what? And they're mining the brain fluid? It's so weird and stupid, but by the time we get to Eternals, what a cool thing. Exactly.
Right.
And I think that when you combine those story beats that James Gunn is just so good at blending with the utility of the MCU, all you have left to do is make these characters shine. And it's the writing, it's the acting, it's the costume design, it's the music that they're given. It's all those things. You know, Robbie, you tried to like think about replicating it and quantifying it. You can't. It's the stars and the moon. It's Shakespeare. It's Spielberg. It's movie magic, baby. You can't do that again. It's lightning in a bottle, Guardians Volume 1.
And yeah, as we kind of transition, It is wild. We got a brief Thanos look in the first Avengers film. But this is really where we got to know that character and also that side of the MCU, to Matt's point, like the cosmic side. And while we didn't follow up with Thanos in Guardians Volume 2, much to Kyle's chagrin, we did follow up with characters that were very much defined by Thanos and the role that he had in their lives. And that's Gamora and Nebula, who I think are some of my favorite parts of Guardians 2. But that's also a lot of what Guardians 2 does in general. And that's like whenever I rewatch it and love it, that's a lot of what I love about that movie, is how unafraid it is to go deep into a lot of these characters' histories and motivations. And I think that we clearly get the most of that with Quill, but we also get a lot of great Gamora Nebula stuff, really, really great Rocket and Yondu stuff, and a lot, maybe too many Drax jokes, but also some pretty good Drax jokes. So in terms of our story here, we have a team at the end of Guardians. Guardians 2, we basically pick up more or less where we left off. At the end of the first film, we lose Groot, but we find out that we have you know, a little mini Groot that's on his way, and we meet back up with a very cute baby Groot.
Do you know who is the motion capture for the dancing baby Groot at the beginning of that movie?
James Gunn, right?
It's the current head of DC Films, James Gunn, which is one of my favorite things.
I love that. Baby Groot, who preceded Baby Yoda, let's not forget, the original very cute little mini CGI character.
100%.
But other than that, other than the change of Groot, we meet these characters pretty much where we left them. And to y'all's point, and then I'll kind of let y'all take it, what I love is that it leans into, like, so often I think you have in a first installment really complex characters, and then by the time you get to the next film, they've lost a lot of what initially made them so appealing, because they sort of just become like in a movie like this, it's like, oh, well, they're the heroes now, so they're just all going to act like heroes, and then we're going to kind of introduce other elements of the story that they'll react to. And that's not what Gunn does in Guardians 2. Instead, we delve into those same things that made them interesting in the first film, which is that they have complex motivations that aren't all totally
altruistic.
Admirable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yeah.
Harbulary
batteries. Such a dumb joke and so funny to me.
Okay. There's a lot of jokes that don't work for me in Guardians 2. That one does. That's not close to what I said.
Capillary batteries.
Exactly. He's like so proud of himself. Like, that's what it is. It's not even close.
It's so good.
So. This is, I remember seeing a review of this movie. You know, this was the same year that The Last Jedi came out. And there's this review that stuck with me that James Gunn's take on Empire Strikes Back is really great and will do until we see what Rian Johnson has in store. And love it or hate it, that's what Gunn was doing. And, you know, it's the same formula. In some sense, right? Like you take the characters that we love together and you separate them and you put them through kind of different trials, and you add a lot of emotion, you add a lot of backstory. And I think, I mean, in so many ways, it still winds up being one of the more emotional MCU films for me. It's one of those that when it hits. And I think by the end of that kind of emotional connection we talked about having with these characters a bit by the end of the first film, you very much have by the end of the second.
You know, something that this movie really does coming off the first one is it feels so much like a direct sequel, unlike other MCU movies are able to do. Like between Iron Man 2 and Iron Man 3, it's hard to make that a true sequel with Avengers in the middle. Look at Steve Rogers in the first Captain America versus Steve Rogers in Winter Soldier. That's a completely different human being. So I you know, as great as that is, don't get me wrong, I mean, that's amazing character progression in a different way. James Gunn, like I said, you know, I think established the team as a group and their dynamics within one another so well in the first one that when we get to two and they're separated and they're more one-on-one, he's able to flex those dynamics in a really cool way. You know, you mentioned Gamora and Nebula. I think one of the more profound, you know, character arcs, or, you know, I guess two character stories in phase three, like phase three has a lot of awesome moments and like really cool, like, wow, narrative situations. I think that hits a profoundness. That can't be a word, can it?
Profundity?
Oh, goodness. Please tell me it's not profundity. Please.
No, it might be, though. You don't know.
I don't. Robbie is the word guy.
Those two green and blue aliens, daughters of Thanos, a guy we barely met, you know, there's so much depth between them. Yeah. Hell yeah, it's profundity.
And then Google told me it's profundity.
The Empire Strikes Back stuff with Peter and his dad, of course, and then Rocket and Yondu. I don't even need to talk about why that's just good writing, because those two characters are fun against each other. So I think just being able to take the foundation you set and play with it instead of trying to capitalize on it, like, and you know, and that sounds stupid, but like you can almost feel when someone's just trying to do the same movie again and like trying to do all the things they did in the previous movie better. I think that this volume two, it's just an extension of volume one more than it is trying to one up the first one. And I think it adds so much to it. And then you mentioned the emotion that this movie has. It definitely has more jokes. It's James Gunn. He's going to spray jokes throughout a movie. That's his thing. And that's, you know, that's how he does comedy. And yes, it's not as smart as Infinity War. It's not as, you know, well-written sometimes as Ragnarok is, but the volume, you know, if you laugh at 70% of the jokes, you're laughing at a lot of the jokes. But like I said earlier, where he's able to bring emotion in the last second where you least expect it, you know, in the first one, Peter, give me your hand, and we're all getting teared up because we all love our moms too. And we like music that our moms listen to as well. Like, that's something that we can all relate to. Do you know why we're crying at the end of volume two? There's a CGI tear going down a raccoon's face while a casket gets blown up by fireworks in the middle of, you know, the abyss.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, and they're playing Father and Son. Just the greatest placement for a song. Yes.
Oh, man.
The
needle drop galore. And it's just those kind of things. It's just another one of those "you're welcomes" on the bottom of the poster. Like, James Gunn knows what he's doing with characters to the point where a raccoon's making us cry. And that's awesome. And it's awesome. And it's just, I think it's a great evolution of volume one. You know, maybe it's definitely not as good as the first one, in my opinion, but where these characters leave off at the end feels so developed and earned, as opposed to just more of what we got last time.
I am old, but I'm happy.
One of my favorite things about, again, talking about going through the watch with folks that had never seen it before.
I should play in the background while Robbie's talking here.
It's not time. I'll
sing it. Yeah, just, yeah, y'all just sing it. One of my
good friends.
One of my good buddies. Back in 2019 when we were kind of starting the rewatch, had a son that was, gosh, probably 7 or 8, and was watching through all these movies, and they got to Guardians 2 and they watched it, and he said after each movie he would ask him, you know, "What'd you think about this one?" And he would always just kind of give his initial thoughts, and he said he asked him about Guardians 2 and he just got really quiet. And so he thought he didn't really like it. And then he walked into his room later that day and he was just sitting by himself listening to Father and Son.
Oh, no.
Crying.
It's like affected him.
Yeah. From the mouth of Babe, the most underrated MCU movie.
Man, I mean, which informs every time I watch. It's like, and of course, my buddy, you know, it's like, just lost it because it's the father and son moment, and that, you know, and so, but I mean, what an incredible placement. And I, even Kyle says, as much as he struggles some with that movie, just,
well, you guys keep trying to bring this back to critical side. I'm trying to keep this back to the story because
I know. Thank you. Kyle, can you tell us where this leaves our character story wise?
Oh, I think two of the most important story pieces for me is that this is the beginning of the turn for Nebula, right? Like, we haven't had any kind of backstory of Nebula being, you know, at all altruistic or having any kind of moral compass. And I think towards the end of this film is the first time you're starting to feel for Nebula and see that she might, you know, switch basically at some point. I think you also feel the same way about Rocket. Like, you kind of get to the end and Rocket's been this really rogue, like, he's the most extreme of the Guardians. But by the end of this film, you're not only feeling things for Rocket, I think you feel like, hey, he could be a part of this team. I appreciate a lot what they did with Peter, Gamora, Drax, etc. I'm not saying that, but I feel like, as you said, Matt, it was a little more of an extension there, like a deeper dive into stuff we kind of knew about them, whereas those two characters got a new plane, a new path, kind of.
100%. And I think that, you know, the weakest part of this movie, I think, is by and large Drax and Mantis and like that kind of C plot that they have. And I enjoy their dynamic. I enjoy every scene they're in. I think it's fun. I also think it's low-key emotional sometimes. It's just not as good as the other parts. But when you look at that aspect of the movie with Drax and Mantis as well, I think it's just enough to keep them strung along into the next movie. We know they're not the main characters of the Guardians franchise, but when we see them again in their next appearance, you know, we're excited to hear them say things. And you look at Infinity War, Drax and Mantis are a big part of that story from a Guardian standpoint. Like, you know, they stay with Quill. So I think that, you know, everything Kyle said was spot on. I don't have anything to add on that just because it does develop two more underrated characters so well in Nebula and Rocket. But our core group gets better with Gamora and Quill being a top tier MCU romance. And then also Drax and Mantis, they just get kind of push each other down the field totally. A little bit, which I think is a good thing because they do play well off each other as far as at least at the very minimum comedic beats. But then it gets sweet sometimes, which is cool.
As soon as they show up in Infinity War, I'm back in. Like, this is Guardians 1 for me. This is perfect. This is the Guardians I want. The second it just says, space, bum, 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 rubber band man. By the way, do you know what that song's about? It's unbelievable. The song is literally about a guy who plays with a rubber band on his feet. It's unbelievable. Yeah,
no, it's a southern bop is what it is.
It's unbelievable. But anyways.
It also sounds a lot like 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton, if you want to check that out.
Yes, and just to catch everybody up, story-wise, where we catch up with the Guardians here at the start of Infinity War is we have the same kind of team dynamic that we had at the end of Guardians 1, but now we do have Mantis as a part of it, and we have Nebula out there as more of an ally. Last we heard from her, she was going to go, after she and Gamora sort of resolved a lot of their sisterly differences, she's going to go out and hunt down Thanos. And then some years elapse, and we meet back up. During
one of the best jokes from Guardians 2, by the way. Oh, I was thinking like a pretty necklace or something. One of my favorite jokes.
Nice hat, make the other guy say,
But after she goes on this epic rant of like the darkness and everything, he's like, what are you
talking
about?
Shout out Sean Gunn.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, so we pick up with them in Infinity War. And I think for me, I'm instantly at home. Like, these are the Guardians I recognize. I think for you, Robbie, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you feel like they got to be careful to not just turn into the full comedic relief and to still have some of that Han Solo rogue adventurous vibe, which I feel like I get, but I know that's like a fundamental difference between you and I, is you don't feel like it happens as much. But
well, specifically Quill. I feel like loses some of the swagger and becomes a little bit of the chump in that movie. That's my only, just because every time I go back and watch specifically Guardians 1, but even Guardians 2, I'm like, man, Quill is like, he has badass moments, you know? And I feel like
that's my freaking father.
Like, he can be a little bit we always use the phrase butt of the joke. He can be the butt of the joke pretty consistently in Infinity War. Again, Infinity War is in my top two Marvel movies currently, so my complaints there are pretty sparse. But
where I was just about to say the same thing. I think that Quill specifically does take a back seat, I guess, when you think about like the aspects of Infinity War. But what's two things are really surprising to me when you look at the Guardians in that movie. First of all, Kyle, I'm right there with you. With Space, Rubber Band Man, like that is one of the best title cards in the MCU, right behind maybe Queens. And a left hand free by old Jay in Civil War.
But it's also that right at the moment when you're needing some lightness in that movie, right? Because you do the whole entry scene of Hulk being tossed out, beat up, and then Loki dying. And you're needing something. Then all of a sudden, bam, 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 out of nowhere. Yeah. And you're like, yes.
That's Marcus McFeely. That's one of the best. That's the second best paced comic book movie of all time. So I think that what happens with Quill is really interesting because
I want to know the first.
Dark Knight.
Okay. Sorry. Oh, wow. Okay.
Dark Knight's a perfect movie. But what's really interesting with Quill is, one, him taking a back seat allows for Gamora to have the fourth most screen time in the movie and be such a central part to the Thanos character. You know, like, he is Thanos' stakes throughout this movie, which is such a poignant thing during the death scene, which is another, you know, top five score in the MCU that Gamora is attached to, which is really awesome. And then, you know, even beyond that, you know, we're talking about Rocket earlier, how Guardians 2 kind of made him a part of the team. Think about that scene in Infinity War where he slaps his knees and says, "All right, time to be the captain." Like, like he has gotten to that point where it's earned that he is talking to Thor a veteran mm-hmm. character in the MCU and helping him through something like that being an earned thing so from true. The raccoon is yeah. such a beautiful thing. So it allows other Guardians to shine and elevate outside of their franchise to where when we come back for Guardians 3, think about how big Gamora and Rocket have gotten since then, let alone Nebula, who's an Avenger.
Thor with the Guardians is elite. That's a special combination.
100%. Continue. Absolutely. It's, mm-hmm. it's the beauty of Avengers 2012 placed in 2018, where mm-hmm. it just makes sense that these characters are with each other talking the way mm-hmm. they do. And the other thing about Quill taking a back seat, I agree. He does take a back seat as far as swagger, the main character vibes, you know, the BDE that he brings into the movie. But think mm-hmm. about what he does. Think about what he does with his supplemental elements, his comedy and his action. He is a very, you know, I don't know, big part's the right way, but he's a part of one of the best action sequences in the MCU with the Battle on Titan. And also, you know, people want to question Peter Quill as a main character in the MCU. This guy is on screen with the Godfather, Robert Downey Jr., so much in this movie and going toe-to-toe yeah. with MCU quips. It's Dude. Not just Quill doing his bit and Downey doing his bit. It is MCU quip-off, and it yeah. is back and forth and awesome. So
don't call us lucky. Exactly. Yeah, we don't know what it means.
We don't know what it means. Okay.
We're optimistic.
Listening is not yes. really something they do. I think that I agree that, you know, it is interesting. If this was more of a Guardians movie, it'd be weird that Quill wasn't a bigger part of it. But yeah, within the 32-man yeah. roster of Infinity War, I think that some underrated Guardians take a step up and Quill shines in the moments he needs. A big play asset on the field.
Mm-hmm.
That gets me inspired. Because going back to what you said about he lacks a little bit of a Han Solo-ness, I don't know. I feel like the entire bit of that quip off, as he calls it, Matt, is that Quill is still kind of the alpha leader of his Guardians, and he's not having an easy time with somebody else who's the alpha leader of the Avengers telling him what to do. And so, like, him even pushing back is kind of the swagger that I want anyways for me.
But see, uh-huh. no, and that's fair.
Like,
and
don't talk to them that way, that kind of thing.
I don't know that I would like it any differently. And you know, again, this is where I don't even know that I could take issue with it. It's just, I think what I'm feeling is he measures up against Thor and is found lacking, right? I mean, that's sort of the joke that mm-hmm. like that is a man, you are a dude. And then
sure, but okay.
Same, but then kind of same with Tony ultimately, right? And we want right. that because Tony at this point is the core of the whole shebang, right? Sure. Like he's the guy. And so we need, and that as now what I'll say is I think the moments that Quill stands out the most to me in this are the moments whenever he just leans into the emotional stuff that Gunn okay. did so well in 1 and 2.
That was my second thing. Matt was talking about really the development from previous movies kind of bleeding in here. I mean, him trying to rescue Gamora from Thanos is one of my favorite right. scenes and sequences. Okay. And the way Thanos says, I like this one. And you know, that mm-hmm. Gamora's telling him, you promised me, I told you to go left, right? That's like, right, perfect. I told you to go right. left is a Han Solo still joke. Like even in this moment, 100%. He's like, dang it. I told you to go left. And she's really like, really right now? Like,
right.
but then
right.
he's still so sad about it. So it's still capturing that beautiful balance there for me. And ultimately I like that he does pull the trigger, which is
yeah,
wild.
Yeah. No, and that yeah, another great moment. And I also, you know, this is the moment that drives Candace crazy whenever we watch this movie. But I love Quill not being able to stop himself from hitting Thanos in the face over and over again.
I love it. And that's like the dumb, like, a ton of people online are like, well, he messed it up, and they almost get mad at him for it as if like that's not part of the story. But I'm like, that's one of the most cool parts of the thing, that you have a human here
right.
who loses control yeah. of his emotion over someone he lost. Feels believable to me.
Another reason Volume 2 is underrated is because it sets up such a big yes. moment in Infinity War. Like the MCU, 30 movies in, we can look at it retroactively. I think retroactively, that moment in Guardians 2 gets bigger knowing yep. what it leads to with him trying to kick Thanos' ass.
And that's one thing that we didn't talk about a ton as we're talking about the development here is the Quill-Gamora relationship. Yeah. And I kind of want to talk about that here before we move further down the line, because that's a... I mean, to Matt's point, that's core to Infinity War. It's also a big part of the little bits that we get of the Guardians and Endgame, and I think could be a, it could at least come into play in the holiday special, and I think will certainly be part of the of Volume 3. But yeah, Volume 2 is where we get that relationship really materialize. You know, like we have the great kind of like Cheers thing, like. I don't know what Cheers is.
I don't know what Cheers is.
And
okay, that's interesting you say that, because really when you think about it, by the time Infinity War and then their small appearance in Endgame is over, you know, really kind of a lot of the core story of Nebula, of Gamora by themselves is kind of wrapped, right? Like a lot of stuff we've learned already about Drax and Rocket, like a lot of that's wrapped up. But my point is, the one thing they're leaning into that's not wrapped up, you know, by the time they go to Endgame and they're going searching is Gamora and Quill. Yeah. Right. And that's what I think they're going to have to lean into on not only the holiday special, but also Guardians 3.
I think that there are three moments in the Gamora and Quill relationship that I think make it such, you know, obviously those two on screen together, they've been through a lot, four movies in, you know, overall, they're a good couple, I think. I think they're great. Mm-hmm. But three moments specifically, just it so proves who they are and where their journey's going. And I think one of the reasons I love this is because me and my wife, Erin, we see ourselves in Gamora and Quill so much. And these three moments really replicate it. It's the in Volume 1, Sam Cooke, Bring It On Home to Me, where Quill teaches Gamora what music is. Like, think about that for a second. Like, he teaches her what music is. And she the melodies are
pelvic
nice.
Pelvic sorcery.
Yeah.
I will not succumb to your pelvic sorcery.
So, you know, we have that first moment where he literally introduces her to hit the most important thing in his life, music. And then you go into Volume 2, the conversation with Drax and Quill. You know, you're a dancer. She's not. She's never going to be a dancer. And then that's how that relationship plays out. And then you go into Infinity War. Bam, 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 bam. Who is rocking out the hardest on that ship but Gamora in the front seat with her leg up, hand over, hand down.
She's mouthing the words, exactly.
The evolution of Gamora with Quill, not through Quill, because she is her own character and the deadliest woman in the galaxy, right? But those two together evolving and Quill learning to become a little bit more of a, you know, actual leader. Gamora learning how to dance and all those things.
Well, Quill becomes more honorable, actually, what she kind 100%. Of sarcastically accuses of. No, but for real, that's what he works towards.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and even that line you pointed out, I just found something so brave. All that becomes true. All that becomes really true by Infinity War. So I think it's such an awesome thing how they use Gamora specifically through the MCU to make her such a pivotal piece of the biggest movie of all time. And I think it works. And I think it just it puts the Guardians on another level. And just one last thing about Infinity War before we move on. Yeah. You know, Robbie, how Marvel Comics is it for them to bring in the Guardians into the Avengers, and the Guardians try to act like they're the leaders, only to find out that they have no shot at leading this operation the way Tony Stark can. You know, in their own comics, in their own movies, they are the A1 sauce of their world. As soon as they meet Tony Stark, they are peasants. And I love that. I think that's very comic booky.
No, and that's such a good thought, because it's so... Well, and that's one of the things that I won't get into it because we're talking about the Guardians, not Infinity War forever. But that's one of the things that makes Infinity War so genius is in comics, it's always fascinating to see how different writers, like if you're a key character from another writer's book that suddenly finds yourself in, you know, writer B's book, writer B probably is not going to give you quite the platform that writer A did. But I think what Marcus McFeely do so well is I think Quill winds up taking a back seat, and I think that's key, and that's why I don't really complain about it ultimately, but I just flag it. But ultimately the way they balance all that and the way that you know, to kind of get back to Gunn, he worked with them to bring out what was so great. I mean, I think most of the best parts of those first films we get there. And that's something that I think when you're dealing with multiple franchises and when you're dealing with the kind of meshing of those, that's really it. The thing about Infinity War and the thing about the Guardians in Infinity War is it just shouldn't have worked. Like it's a number of things that shouldn't have worked, and it works so well that eventually it, you know, inspires a reprise here in Love and Thunder. But before we get there, so Endgame, to go back to the formula that I said I would adhere to and have not adhered to, where did that leave? Like as we closed off the Infinity Saga, we've talked about the Peter Gamora relationship, some of the Drax and Mantis relationship. Where did the Infinity Saga leave our Guardians characters?
So I see your structure. I'm going to totally ignore it for a second.
Cool, thanks. love that.
we were talking about the growth that Quill has because of Gamora and how she wants him to be more honorable. While the appearance in Love and Thunder is short, that's actually something that I think they continue very, very well, is that through Endgame and then through their short appearance in Love and Thunder, I think you see that. By the time we get to Love and Thunder, Quill is the one consoling Thor. So he's kind of come so far on that growth trajectory we're talking about that now he's the one that's a little more under control and trying to tutor somebody else. And I kind of love that. And that happens in Endgame as well. So that's why I'm kind of tying those both together. They're both short appearances, but I think it's just a continued step for him.
Yeah, and I think that Endgame, you know, one of the best decisions that Endgame made overall is that it committed to making that movie about the group that, you know, the core six, correct. Right? It's Steve, it's Tony, it's Bruce, it's Clint, it's Natasha, it's Thor. And everybody else, you know, obviously with portals becomes supplementary and a part of an action sequence. I think it's totally a profound choice that they made. The same way in No Way Home, the profound choice to make that movie about Tom Holland as opposed to everything else. So I don't think that we can pull much from the Endgame perspective. Oh, wait, Nebula is like a key piece to that entire movie out of nowhere. Just such a side character in Volume 1.
Infinity War is Gamora's movie, and then Endgame is Nebula's movie.
Nebula starts Volume 1 as the sister to the supporting character and the sidekick to the villain. And she ends up being an Avenger during Endgame.
That's true.
A friend of Tony Stark. Rhodey, be clear on landing. There's an idiot in the runway. Like, there's so many. She is a part of the Avengers in such a core way. Same way Okoye is. Same way Rocket is. Mm. And it's just, it's so amazing how they were able to, almost without anybody noticing, take Nebula make her one of the few MCU characters to break into the core six and be a part of Endgame in a major way before Portals. And it's just, it's an awesome thing.
Projecting forward, that's one of the things I'm most excited about, because I've heard Karen Gillan talk about how excited she is to take this character another step in Guardians 3. And I feel like a lot of fun things could happen there. And you're right. That's a character that's totally under the radar. Like, no one will bring that up in the first 10 characters. You say, hey, what are the 10 most important, you know, subplots? No one's going to bring that up. But by the end of it, you're like, oh, dang, you did. She snuck up on us. And it's amazing.
Eighth most screen time at Avengers Endgame, the biggest movie of all time until James Cameron wanted to run his movie back.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, James Cameron. I also, if Kyle's going to jump forward, I can jump back. I think those are the rules.
Love that.
something else that I do want to highlight as we're kind of talking about finishing out the Infinity Saga with them is I also feel like the dusting scenes that we get with the Guardians are some of the more poignant in Infinity War. Like, not just the Groot Rocket scene, which is heartbreaking, but also, if you haven't looked up the script that James Gunn wrote for Vin Diesel to follow as he was saying the I am Groots, you should go look it up because it's extra heartbreaking. James Gunn writes lines that Groot should be communicating every time he says I am Groot, so that Vin Diesel knows like the exact inflection to use with each reading. And the one that he used for Infinity War was, but also the one of my favorite moments in Infinity War is whenever Drax first starts getting dusted and he's like, Quill, it's such a,
so
like
true.
Kyle, to your point, he's become the leader so much so that like instinctually, as soon as Drax starts, like, when he's uncertain, when he's in danger, he just reaches out to Quill as the person that can help. And then Quill's face, when he realizes he can't do anything about it.
Right. I can back that up by him just going, oh man, like, yeah, I lost. Oh, and then the double backup is Tony Stark. After all the disagreement, being the one being like, steady Quill. I don't want to lose you here, you know, kind of thing.
Guys, that's so cool. How cool is that?
Yeah.
How cool is Tony Stark, steady Quill? Like he's a part of the team. Just like he's got a nickname, just like everybody else does.
Yeah.
And it's just Infinity War, awesome.
And I love that line too when he comes out and goes, "Did we just lose?
Yeah.
Did we just lose?
He's shocked.
Yeah.
We had everything going for us
because it's always been so. They always win. It's always been so loosey goosey for them. So for him to be like, "What? That we lost?
My plan, by the way."
Exactly. Well, yeah.
I think that is key because the scenes that we get with Quill in Endgame, aside from Nebula, there's the Rocket, where Rocket has, like, as he previewed in that scene Matt talked about in Infinity War, kind of had to continue to play that role of leader. And some, like, you see it a little bit even in the ways he interacts with Nebula, like whenever she gets back with Tony at the beginning of Endgame and they have a moment, but then also the moments that he has with Thor continually through there. And then like how emotional he is
today. So sorry.
It just becomes like, I think I say all this and I go back to Infinity War to say that, like, as we leave these characters at the end of Endgame, they're heading out with Thor, and that's, you know, a plot beat. We now know, oh, they're back with Thor, and that will come into play here in the next and final appearance we've had. But also, we have a team that, as we talked about in Volume 1 and 2, had grown consistently closer. We developed different areas of their individual characters and the character of the team as a whole. But now it's like there's kind of a even some of the Avengers don't have. Like, there's a family aspect of the Guardians. There's like a deep connectivity that I think Infinity War, like, again, which is insane, Infinity War and Endgame and the interplay there only enhanced, despite the fact that those characters are barely even in a lot of Endgame. At least, you know, Quill and Gamora and Drax.
That's so good. This is going to sound like I'm saying one group is lesser than the other, and I'm not. I love that there's a distinction. I love that it feels like the Avengers family is like protecting the world at all costs, right? But the Guardians feel like they are protecting their own family at all costs. Like, if we can save the world, great. But yeah, it does feel like such not isolated, but, you know what I mean? Like a unit. Just them in particular. Like, yeah, we can help too, but not at the expense of like losing one of our Guardians, you know?
Sure.
Right.
I think that to paraphrase what you just said differently, Kyle, I think, yes, the Guardians feel more like a family. The Avengers feel a lot like friends from work, I agree, a cool distinction. Do you guys like sitcoms? By chance?
Yes, depends on what it is, though.
Sure, yeah. But, like, I love sitcoms, New Girl, Friends, Modern Family, all these different things. I think one of the coolest things about sitcoms in 20 episodes a season is by season 2 or 3, you get to know all these characters so well together that they can play off each other in such cool ways. And I think Guardians has that vibe, where, you know, just kind of moving, you know, just looking ahead to Love and Thunder, when Nebula is walking up the ramp, when the goats are screaming, she's like, I'm getting the hell off this planet or whatever. Like, that's such a throwaway line, but it's so funny because we know so much about Nebula and what she thinks about everybody else in this group.
Mm-hmm. And she'd be so annoyed by that. Yeah.
The last thing she wants is more people around her, let alone more giant screaming goats. And I just think that they do have such a unique chemistry being a team for three movies, if you include Infinity War. And that's just something that you're not getting anywhere else in the MCU. And I think it's something that's going to make us all cry a lot next May in a very large and dramatic public way.
Yeah. Super
public, but
I mean, I do have it hard on my sleeve, Kyle.
Man, if my last Wakanda Forever viewing is any indication,
was public? Yikes. Were you live streaming it, Mark Ruffalo?
But
there are people who do that.
what I also love, and you know, I don't know if we'll get any more of this at this point, but that little brief moment you highlighted with Nebula in Love and Thunder, I love that Nebula saw, like, when she met Thor, he was like a mess, right? Like, he was like in the throes of just, like, he was out of it all the time and the sunglasses and Lebowski style. And so I love that she's like watched that guy progress into now like God bod Thor, and that he's like projecting and trying to act like he's the leader. And you just imagine she's like beyond over all of it.
Sure.
Rolling her eyes, yeah.
But in general, yeah, like I think that I agree that that's such a great combination. And we get very little of those characters. But I think one thing I said in our initial Thor Love and Thunder review is I feel like this kind of gets back to the Quill that I'm talking about missing. Like, yeah. I like even just the visuals. He's a little like more rugged. He's not quite as clean. Like, the hair is kind of matty. And yeah. I mean, he's been using the Bowflex, you know? And, but I love that he's taking that role. Like, it's joke. Like, it's played for laughs, but it's also a core part of the entire Love and Thunder movie is that little speech that Quill gives to Thor at the very beginning.
Totally. Mm-hmm. We talked about in that episode that there's a little bit of give and take there, though, right? Because I feel like slightly that butt of the joke was transferred to Thor there, and that turned some people off, that now it's gone from Quill to Thor, and they don't love it. They don't love him being that way either. But 100%. Yes, in doing that, the good is you're getting Quill back as Han Solo, kind of.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. You just awoken a critique I have about Love and Thunder. I wasn't able to quantify when we reviewed it this summer I don't necessarily love that Thor takes a back seat to Quill as far as like mentality there. That's more about Thor than it is about Quill, though. I think with Quill specifically, there's a Guardian saga so far, right? I think with Quill specifically, it is an awesome stopgap between where we left him last and where we're going next. Just because it is so brief and quick that it's hard to think too much into it. But it's a good check-in. I know where these guys are. And
right.
One of the things I love that the MCU does is these efficiency measures that they take. Guess what we don't have to do in the first 20 minutes of Guardians now? We don't have to say goodbye to Thor. And I think like that's such an efficient step that Marvel Studios has taken to play that comedic beat, set the tone for Love and Thunder, while also getting the Guardians off the board in Thor's world and back on the board in their world.
Which is a beat we thought they actually would do in the special originally. Like when we had predicted, we thought that's when they would do that.
Yeah.
So as we're kind of wrapping up here then, knowing all that, talking about where all those characters have been, what do you guys think about the special? Where do you think we're going? And then ultimately Guardians 3. Like, what can we learn from this to take towards that?
So if I could jump in, I think the special is going to have a less of an impact than maybe people think. And this is not going off where the Guardians have been so far. This is going off Werewolf by Night, the first special presentation by Marvel Studios, which I'm shocked I haven't listened to your guy. Michael Cimino is...
We loved it. We loved it.
He's an elite talent as far as like making movies. Like, his scores are great. I think he did a good job there. But that was such a interesting take on what a one-shot could be in the MCU, that I think that these hyper-stylized special presentations are going to be so contained. It'll be interesting to see what we get with Guardians, being characters that we've already seen before and we know we're getting next year. But what I think the trailers have taught me, and a poster that...
By the way, Matt, exactly. We talked about that on that werewolf episode. It'll be interesting to see the... I want to see the Guardians one first before I make a conclusion on what those specials are going to be. Sure. Like, was werewolf, because of the genre of it, no matter what, going to feel really isolated? If the Guardians one also feels like entirely separate, then I think that's the trend. I'll be fascinated to see if it is more tied or not.
And my take is it's going to be more separate than people are expecting. Maybe okay, not as yeah, separate sure, as Werewolf by Night. Obviously, that's a totally different corner of the universe at this right. point.
Sure, sure.
But I think what they're going to do, how they're going to separate it from what Guardians has been and what Guardians is going to be next May, look at the two characters they're focusing on. It's Drax and Mantis. Mm. And those are the two characters we've talked about haven't gotten their chance to really develop any further. And I think it's going to be more fun than it is character developing. I think it's going to be more of a Christmas movie than anything else. Not a James Gunn movie, not a comic book movie. It's going to be those things too, but it's going to be a Christmas movie because Werewolf by Night was a 30s Dracula movie. And I think that they're going to keep that hyper-stylization. And I think taking Drax and Mantis, separating them from the group, sending them to Earth, I think that's going to allow the 41-minute runtime. I bet anybody other than Drax and Mantis doesn't get any more than 10 minutes.
We might be shocked at how little Quill is in it.
I think it's going to be a first five, last five for Quill.
Did you guys see the quote James Gunn had about this script and about Guardians 3?
Maybe.
Because this is fascinating, because he talked about how the reaction to the Guardians holiday special script was so positive that he was like having to remind people, guys, I still have like Guardians 3 that I'm really proud of and I'm working on. But like, I guess this Guardians holiday special has been so positive that it's like stolen some of the spotlight from what he's trying to wrap up. So I just wonder what that means. Like, I guess in that way, he doesn't view it as a throwaway thing, you know? I guess I'm saying, like, does that mean it is a little more tied than Matt's saying? I don't know. We'll find out, obviously.
My prediction is that Drax and Mantis take that jump we've seen every other Guardians member take, other than maybe Groot, which, you know, he only says three words, and it's I and am and Groot, and usually in that order. I think that Drax and Mantis are going to take a jump here and another efficiency play. By the time we get to Guardians 3, everybody's at a very heightened level of characterization for us to dive into, play with, and ball our eyes out about.
Do you guys think by the end of the MCU, Groot will ever say something else? Do you think it will ever happen in some crazy powerful moment, besides We Are Groot, that he'll say like something?
Word?
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
I love you.
So Matt, that's one thing we've talked about here is, you know, I know years ago, before all of the James Gunn leaving Disney drama, I remember hearing about the reaction to that Volume 3 script and how much the cast was just kind of wrecked by it. And we've talked about how that was, you know, pre-Infinity War, and how my sense is that Gunn had a plan for this trilogy kind of separate and apart from what wound up happening and how integral those characters, like we were just saying, were to the end of the Infinity Saga. Do you think that the holiday special will do any work in kind of bridging that distance between kind of what Marcus McFeely created with Infinity War and Endgame back to where maybe James Gunn envisioned this ending?
So that's a great question. And before I saw the trailer, before I saw Werewolf by Night, I had always thought that the holiday special was going to be where James Gunn brings Gamora back into the fold and does the trilogy he's always wanted to do without the death of Gamora in play, right? I think that less after Werewolf by Night and seeing this trailer, I don't think we can, you know, give the emotion that is needed to make Gamora's re-entry into the Guardians worth it, and also have Kevin Bacon running around in his front yard. I don't think we can have both those things at once.
Sure,
but
fair.
My, you know, where my money would go, my best bet on that would be post-credit scene setting up where Gamora is. So in the first 15, 20 minutes of Guardians 3, that can be rectified more quickly so we can move on to whatever we're doing with High Evolutionary, Adam Warlock, etc.
See, that'll be fascinating. And Robbie and I have said that a lot. How much can James Gunn pivot with that, and how much is he willing to embrace that or not? Because I think Robbie's right. I don't think losing Gamora was probably ever originally on his personal table. Like, his script was probably not going to do that. And he was thrown a curveball in that she was a huge pivotal moment in one of the biggest movies of all time. And that's the catch, is like, we are on the record a lot of times saying, like, man, we don't want them to reverse that, because it although Gamora is one of my favorite characters, and Robbie knows I'm a huge Gamora guy, like, I never want them to reverse stakes. And yet, you know, the White Vision thing, that was another moment for me. And now here Gamora's coming back. And, like, I don't want to zoom out and look back and be like, wow, they kind of undid a lot of the really powerful moments. But at the same time, I understand the frustration of James Gunn losing a character that he was probably planning on tying up the story in his own way, because it was his trilogy too. So I just think we're going to learn a lot on how he wants to handle that and how well he can pivot there or not.
I agree. I think it's not ideal for what Gunn wanted, but we've seen two pretty big examples of leaning into a script that you were given and leaning out of a script that you were given in recent history. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. That was a curveball that was thrown. That's something that they didn't want to have to do. And no, it's not merged perfectly, the story that they wanted to do and the story they ended up telling. It's not perfect, but man, does it work when it works. Then you look at Rise of Skywalker, where J.J. Abrams completely just disregarded everything Rian Johnson did. And I think that ends up being a soulless mess. And I think that, that is a good example of, you know, I think it's better to embrace the curveball you've been given, and as opposed to totally disregarding it, because back to my baseball analogy, you know, you swing hard. Yes, you can miss or you can hit a home run. You get a hold of a curveball, that thing's awake, man. It's done. It's over.
You hang it, I'll bang it. You hang it, I'll bang it.
100% right across the plate, Sammy Sosa, left field, gone.
Yep.
See ya.
Yes, see ya.
Wow. I'm with you. Wow.
And if anyone's going to do it, it's James Gunn. Best hand-eye contact in movie making.
Right? Another baseball analogy. He's Ichiro of filmmaking.
Dude, I mean, Ichiro was really weird too. Ichiro really into billiards, a little fun fact. Used to bring his own stick everywhere he went.
But that is the thing I'm tracking the most, and I'm excited. Yeah, I think he'll handle it well. I don't think he'll just crap on Infinity War and Endgame and that emotional motivation. And I do think that the way they did it, if there was a way to do it, I don't mind the time travel. It's a different Gamora, and he has to kind of rebuild that relationship. And I'm thankful that it hasn't happened already willy-nilly. So at least we've had a few years by the time it happens for that development to take place.
Well, and even the fact that the holiday special seems to be leaning into him being in some kind of depression.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, like, that's what I'm talking about.
That also adds some weight.
That's one way to still have weight and stakes without actually, you know, they're going to bring her back, but at least this is still effective.
Right.
Think about that. Like, the holiday special focuses on Quill's, you know, wanting or missing Gamora or wanting to go look for her. If they do the post-credit thing where they set up where Gamora is at, just so we don't have to learn that again in a couple months, think about how important that opening scene of Guardians 3 is going to be. I mean, the opening scene of Guardians 1 is a tone setter. The opening scene of Guardians 2 is a plot setter. This is going to be an emotional stakes setter, I think, like Civil War, like Winter Soldier. That's going to be a big opening scene, guys, and it's going to come before our first needle drop, which I know we're not talking about production and critiquing these movies. Guys, we get another soundtrack. The two That's greatest true. Playlists ever made. Yeah. We're going to get a third one and a Christmas bonus album. Come on now.
Is it going to be even later? Will it be like 70s or 80s music? 80s music?
Oh, I'm excited, though. He's ruined modern day music for me.
I do listen to the playlists on Spotify all the time, no doubt.
Well, I feel like now we're going to have Matt back on after the holiday special to react to the holiday special.
Sure.
Just Matt, because if not, I'm just going to want to call Matt anyway, so we might as well record it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I encourage you guys to text me anytime you want to nerd out about things. This is my favorite thing. And Kyle, I don't know if you've known this. I doubt you guys have, you know, like, you know, followed me in any sort of, like, close way other than maybe Twitter. I love the things I love is like one of my favorite quotes of all time.
Oh,
I love being passionate about the things I'm passionate about. It's so real. And that's the kind of stuff that I think the MCU gives us. And that's the kind of stuff Guardians gives us, because it's blind, almost like guilty pleasure that we all love Guardians so much. But man, is it good.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Matt, thanks for joining us. The best.
Yes. Of course. Yeah. No, guys, thank you guys so much for having me. This is a pleasure, and I'd love to come back for the Guardians Holiday episode. Just let me know. I'm here. Your world. I'm living in it.
And thank you, everyone out there, for listening. We love you all so much. Stay in touch with us on social media at the FFW Podcast. Check out our website, theffwpodcast.com. And don't forget, please, please, please rate, review, and subscribe so you can get more Friends From Work goodness in your feeds. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next week talking about the Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special here on Friends From Work.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.